Awesome, awesome stuff. Hey, you know, we just wanted to make sure that you're in the love mood before we jump into week three of this series. You know, there's nothing like, a good love story, right? At least this is what my wife thinks. We got to watch a lot of, you know, my movies and my TV stations changed dramatically when I got married. You know, it used to be ESPN, 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 and then it was romantic comedy, you know, and stuff like that. But anyway, so glad you guys are here. Great job, worship band. So glad everybody's here for week three of our series called After the Rose. And this series is a spinoff of the show, The Bachelor or The Bachelorette. And on the show, you get to watch as a single man or a single woman goes on the show in hopes of finding lasting love and maybe a future spouse, right? And it's one of those things, they go on these elaborate fairy tale dates, and they choose one person at the end that they want to spend the rest of their life with. And they do so by giving them a rose. And it's beautiful, it's great, it's romantic, it's like, oh, this is so, I love, love, you know? And everybody's happy. But the thing is, this series is part two. This series is part two of what that picture is, because the truth is, it's really about how do we maintain a healthy relationship, not just a marriage, but any relationship. How do we maintain a healthy relationship after the rose, after the commitment? If you're married, after you say, I do, and you pledge your life to one another. How do we do that? Like, how do we keep that fairy tale going on? You know, Rick Warren once said this. He said that marriage is a work of art. He says it's half art and half work. Isn't that true, right? It's half art and half work. And the truth is, it does take work. It takes investment to build a strong relationship, in any relationship, but especially in a marriage. It takes work. Because a real relationship isn't just built on feelings and emotions, because feelings and emotions are flighty, right? They go up and down. In fact, have you ever heard this Italian song? Dun, 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 dun. It's, I sang opera in college, and it's like, you know, la donna immobile, qual più mal vento, you know, whatever, right? And it's like, oh, this is so beautiful in Italian, and well, you got to learn the words of what you're singing when you're in voice school. And so I went in there singing all romantic-like, and my teacher said, well, did you look at the words? I said, oh, it just means I love you so much. She said, no, it doesn't. What do you mean? And I looked it up, and it says, women are flighty as a feather. That's what it says. That's like the words. You're like, you know. And so I started singing that song really differently. And the truth is, women are not flighty as a feather, but emotions and feelings are flighty as a feather. They go up and down. You're never going to listen to that song in the same way anymore. Like, same is true for me. But the truth is, a marriage isn't just feelings and emotions. It's a partnership. It's a partnership where you commit your life to being teammates and helpmates in life together, right? Through thick and thin, for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer. There's seasons of scarcity and there's seasons of plenty, but you commit to do life together, to be teammates and helpmates. And that's really what love is. It's a commitment, not feelings and emotions. Those go and come. But love is a commitment, and it's a decision. And so what we're talking about in the series is, I think I just played the piano on my phone. Weird. I'm excited today because today we're talking about, I think, the number one reason that relationships will either thrive and soar or maybe even struggle. And it's so important for our lives, and you may be surprised to know that it's communication. Communication. In fact, Ed Young once said this about communication. He said that too many couples buy into the idea that once they say, I do, they automatically grow in intimacy. Like, well, we got married, now I guess we're just going to grow and everybody's going to be happy forever and ever and ever. But the truth is, communication is the key to connecting in a marriage, right? Communication is the key to connecting. And so the thing is, I want you to know, just a quick note, this is not just a series about marriage. Let me just say that. I know we're looking through the love scenes and marriage, and we're talking through that lens, but whether you're single or divorced or widowed or married, you've been married for years and years, and you say, I don't have anything to learn. We got this. Here's the thing. All of us can grow in our relationships, and these things that we're talking about today can apply, these principles can apply to every single relationship, especially since we're talking about communication. And so I want you to know that. The other thing, too, is this truth, is that communication, a lot of times when we think about communication, we think about speaking to somebody, right? We maybe have a lot on our heart and we dump our words onto somebody and we call it communication sometimes. But as you know, if you've been married especially, that's not communication. Just because you've talked doesn't mean that something's been communicated, right? In fact, men, you know this really well. I had to learn this the hard way, is when my wife, when women say, you know, that they want something done, like, hey, can you take out the trash? They're not saying, do you have the ability to take out the trash? Like, yeah, I got this. Like, they mean right now, right? That means like, hey, we got people coming over and I need your help right now. So just because you've said something doesn't mean it's been communicating, right? I had learned that the hard way. But anyway, the thing is, when it comes to communication, today what we're going to be looking at is how can we communicate in a way where we truly understand one another? How do we communicate in a way where we truly understand one another? You know, Stephen Covey, great leadership guru, I guess you could say, businessman, he once said this, that the biggest communication problem is we do not listen to understand, we listen to reply. And you know this, I mean, we've all been in those situations where maybe you're at a gathering, a party or something like that, and somebody's talking to you, maybe even your spouse, and you're listening to them, but then you're immediately starting to think about, well, here's what I'm going to say next. And before you even realize it, they finish talking and you realize, oh my goodness, I don't even know what they just said. And you're like, oh, that's nice. And then they said something not good. And then you realize you're put on an awkward predicament, right? The thing is, we oftentimes don't listen to understand, we listen to reply. And for us, communication, it's not just an exchange of words. Communication is really about understanding one another. And so today, what I want us to do is we're going to look at a few passages, but the main one comes from Ephesians chapter 4, the end of it, and the beginning of Ephesians chapter 5. And it's going to start with verse 29. It's on the screen. But here's the thing. The Apostle Paul, last week we looked at one of the letters the Apostle Paul wrote. This is another one of those letters. Paul planted churches all throughout the area, and he would basically, he didn't have email to write to each other, and so he would basically write a letter and send it to the church. And so this is written to the church of Ephesus, and he's lifting up the model of how much God loved us. And we've been using that as a model throughout our whole series to say, here's how God loved us, and so how can we apply that to our relationships? But he's saying, here's how God has loved us, how he first loved us. And what he's doing is he's saying, look, this is one of those things that this is because God loved you, this is how we can walk in the way of love, by valuing one another and by the way we communicate with one another. I want you to check it out, Ephesians chapter 4, starting in verse 29. Paul says this. He says, do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouths. Really, Paul? That's a high standard, right? He says, but only what is helpful for building others up according to their needs, that it may benefit those who listen. He says, and do not grieve the Holy Spirit of God, with whom you were sealed for the day of redemption. Get rid of all bitterness, rage, and anger, brawling, ooh, that's a little crazy, right? Brawling and slander, along with every form of malice. He says, be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving each other, just as in Christ God forgave you. He says, follow God's example, therefore, as dearly loved children. And I love this next part. And walk in the way of love. Walk in the way of love, just as Christ loved us and gave himself up for us as a fragrant offering and sacrifice to God. Now here's the thing. He's saying, look, because of God's incredible love for you, like everything starts with this reality of how God first loved us, that while we were sinners, Christ came for us and he loved us anyway. He says, and therefore, because God has loved you in such a way in all your relationships, Paul says, I want you to walk in the way of love. Just as I modeled for you and have done for you, and if you're connected to me, I will empower you to do this. Walk in the way of love. Walk in the way of love. I love that. So I want to encourage you that when you communicate, to start from that framework, start from that idea to walk in the way of love. In fact, here's the first thing I want to tell you today about communication. I think it'll be helpful for you. It's number one is this. When you speak, lead with love. When you speak in any relationship, lead with love. Now, that sounds really simple, but let me just unpack this for a second. Because just imagine for a second, in every moment, in every situation, if you Before you even communicate something to your spouse or to your friend or to your coworkers, before you even say a word, what if you led with love and said, you know what? I want to communicate right now that I care for you. I mean, how would your communication be different? I think it'd be so much different. Like, in this moment, before I say this, like, I know that we've had this issue, but let me lead with love. And so that means we got to listen and communicate with a love mindset. And when you're communicating with your spouse, start with a mindset that you love your spouse and you just want to show your love to him or to her or your coworker or classmate or whoever it is. But here's the thing, no matter what else is going on, no matter what they've done right or wrong or anything else, because if you start with your love for them, you'll begin to walk with love and you'll begin to talk even more with love. And so Paul gives us this really practical verse in verse 29, Ephesians 4, 29. Here's what the Apostle Paul says here. He says, do not, we just read it, but let's unpack it. He says, do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouths, but only what is helpful for, what does he say? Building others up. Building others up according to my needs, right? Nope, what does it say? According to their needs, right? Last week we talked about a me-third relationship. How we're to put God first in our lives because God is the source. How we put others second, and then we live our lives to say, no, me third, me third. And we do our marriage like that, where God is first, where our spouse is second, and me third, man, things change so much. Because we're no longer trying to build up our own needs. We're trying to build others up for the sake of them, for their needs, and what's best for them. This is what Paul is talking about. Choose your words wisely. Use words that build up. See, maybe you've heard this phrase before. If you don't have something nice to say, don't say it, right? Don't say it at all, right? Yeah, Mama said that, right? Mama, life is like a box of chocolates. But she said a lot of other things, right? And so the thing is, Mama was right about that, right? If you don't have something nice to say, here's the thing. We oftentimes think that our words live in this happy box of neutrality. Like the words that we speak are just words that we lob into the atmosphere, and our words are neutral. They don't have value. They don't have meaning. They don't, you know, and so oftentimes we throw words around like it's no big deal, right? But the truth is, it's like, you know, you heard that silly saying that says, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words may never hurt me, right? And you might have said that on the playground before, but I imagine that you went home on the bus that day, and the thing that you were replaying over and over and over is the very thing that they said about you. In fact, counselors, and as a pastor, I see this over and over, where the scars and the shrapnel of what's happened in people's lives, so things that people have said have hurt them for years and years, like a broken record they keep replaying. Our words matter. They're not neutral. And so Paul is saying this. He's like, look, your words, the words that you use in your relationship and in your marriage, like they have tremendous power. In fact, in every relationship and in every moment, we all have a choice on how we use our words. That we can either use our words to build others up according to what they need, right? To build others up. Or we can choose to use our words to tear people down. And the thing is, I have to tell you, I messed this up big time yesterday. Like here I am, like I'm prepping for a message on communication, and I dropped the ball big time, right? So we were up here setting up the stage. I brought my dad up here with me, and my son, Peyton, was supposed to have baseball practice after, got rained out. But I said, why don't you come with us, and you can help us set up, you know. And so we come up here on Saturdays, and we set up, you know, the stage, all the cables, all the cords, to make sure everything is plugged in the way it needs to go, and it looks perfect so that when the band comes in for rehearsal at 7:15 in the morning, right, everything's ready. Like, they don't have to come an hour early to get it ready, right? And so we come and we're doing that, and Peyton said, hey, Daddy, can I move a chair? I said, yeah, you can move a chair. Have fun. You know, we were just having fun. We're setting up and connecting. I said, sure, move a chair. And we were working around here, and I turned around, and I looked, and this little head was right over top of the soundboard. And he had taken the chair, and he was standing on the chair, and he was over top of the soundboard, and he was moving the buttons and moving the knobs, and I'm looking at things, and I was like, first of all, what I thought was, oh my goodness, our production team works so hard to make sure that the sound is in a perfect place so that people can best experience God, and only God knows what some of these knobs and buttons do, you know, and so like, we'll never get this back, little five-year-old fingers moving it everywhere, but what came out, my approach was wrong. And in that moment, trying to be so quick, I said, no, stop, get away from it, you know. And I was telling him, like, you know, move away from the board. And I said, show me what you did. And he, what did you turn? He said, everything. But in that moment, I was thinking, oh my goodness, how are we ever going to get this thing back? But what he received was something very different. What he received is, my dad's upset with me. I messed up. And he walked, like, I was kind of looking around, and he had walked out of the room, and he had walked down the hallway out here, and I was like, man, I just blew it, you know? And so I went and grabbed him. I said, buddy, come here, come in here. And he was like, I'm so sorry. He said, it was off. He said, you know, he said, I didn't know it was going to do anything, you know? And so I got down on my knee, and I talked to him. I said, buddy, listen, I'm so sorry. Like, I shouldn't have responded that way. You know, this, for now on, this soundboard thing, this is an adult thing only, but here's the thing. You're more important than anything that would ever happen. You're more important than any of this stuff, and if all this would break and all this would mess up, you're most important in my life. I'm so sorry that I hurt your feelings, and I love you. And it was one of those things where it's like he was still talking about that, worried that he had messed something up for the service and all these things, and it was like, man, how bad did I mess that up, right? And it just shows, here's what Proverbs chapter 18, verse 21 says. It says, the tongue has the power of life and death, and those who love it will eat its fruit. It's like, I experienced that in an awful way yesterday. Now, thankfully, for the grace of God, we don't always get it right, but thankfully that we can turn it back around and say, buddy, I'm sorry. Will you forgive me, right? And all this stuff. But you hear this verse, the tongue has the power of life and death. It's like, life and death, really, Paul? Like, that's real strong. Life and death. I would imagine almost every argument, every conflict, nationwide, worldwide, and even in your relationships, started with something that somebody said. And so the thing is, our words are headed somewhere. He's saying our words are building towards something. Our words have direction that will either lead toward life or death. And so let me just play a couple scenarios so you see this played out. Let's say a husband has been working really, really hard, really long hour, has been working all day. It's been a long day. He's tired, and he can't wait to come home. And he comes home, and he opens the door, and he hopes to smell, you know, the smell of like a home-cooked meal, like to see his family and eat some good food, right? All the basics in life. But when he arrives, you know, his wife had been kind of distracted by some things going on, and their kids were kind of going crazy, and, you know, she accidentally had kind of left the roast, going a little bit too long, and it ended up burning. The roast is burnt. And so the wife, you know, it's you know, kind of, they sit down for dinner, and the husband looks at the, you know, at the roast that's in front of him that's now burnt, and he says to her, just imagine this, look, I've been working all day, and I don't ask you for very much, but at the very least, after I've been working so hard for us, at the very least, I'd like to eat something that's not burned. And just imagine how that plays out, right? It's like, you know, all you married men are like, oh, dang, right? Something's going to happen, right? Here's the thing. I talked to couples so many times, and one of the things that you oftentimes see as couples are struggling is they'll say, how did we even get here? Like, what is it that got us here? And it wasn't one thing. It wasn't like one big thing. It was accumulated moments like that of the way we use our words, right? And the thing is, your words have the power, good and bad. They have compound interest. They build over time, and they lead in a direction. And so you can see really quickly how those words are a pathway that leads to death and destruction in a relationship. And if you play that over and over and over again, man, how do you recover, right? Only by the grace of God. And so let me play this out again. Scenario number two. Same thing. Same things are going on. The husband's been working, long day. He's tired. He comes in the door. He hopes to smell this amazing dinner. And he walks in the door, and he immediately notices something's not right. You know, something smells burned. And he sits down at the table. They sit down at the table together. And his wife, very embarrassed, has her head down. And she, you know, opens up the roast. And he can just see his wife is so defeated, you know? She looks tired too and defeated. And this time, though, he looks her in the eyes and he says, honey, look, thank you so much for everything you do for us. Like, you do so many things for us and for our family that I will never realize all the different things that you do to care for us. But if a burnt roast is the biggest thing that we have to deal with every once in a while, then I'm the luckiest man in the world. Thanks for all you do. I love you. And, you know, you see how this scenario plays out very differently when our words, same thing, different response. And some of the women were like, amen, you know, hope my husband got that, right? Here's the thing. You play that scenario over and over and over, and you can quickly see how your relationship will be leaning in the direction of life, right? So when we communicate, and when you communicate, the Apostle Paul is saying this, be kind and compassionate. Like, choose your words wisely, be kind and compassionate, because your words are never neutral. So here's the second thing I want to remind you of, and it's this. I want to encourage you to do this. Choose words that build up and bring life. Choose words that build up and bring life. Now, I imagine you've heard this statement before. It's not what you say, but, man, some of y'all are married. You know this really well. It's not what you say, but how you say it, right? In your relationships, you know, the way you communicate is so important. And the truth is, here's one thing I've seen over and over in my life, but also as a pastor, I've seen it when it comes to communication, that you might be 100% right. You might be 100% right in what you say. It might be completely factual, completely accurate. They might have done something. They might have said something. It's 100% true. But if your approach is wrong, it can make the whole thing wrong. And the thing is, when we communicate in our relationships, we got to remember our words and our approach matters. Now, let me just switch gears here, because I think this is going to be another helpful thing for you. Have you ever noticed that it is difficult sometimes to understand your spouse? It is difficult sometimes to understand how your spouse communicates. The thing is, let me just borrow this phrase from a best-selling book. Men are from Mars, women are from Venus. You heard that before? It's this idea, this groundbreaking idea, where it was a bestseller book that basically said men and women think differently. They think differently. And the thing is, sometimes it feels like we're communicating with someone from a different planet, right? They don't understand me. She doesn't understand me. He doesn't understand me, right? And we have to realize that men and women communicate very different. We think differently, and we communicate love very differently. In fact, this idea comes from Mark Gunger. He shares this idea. I want to share it with you. Let's start with a man's brain, the way a man is wired. Now, to help us with this, we got our trusty Jake in the Neverland Pirate, right? A man's brain. I don't know if he's technically a man, but go with it, right? I asked my kids for help last night, and this is what they came up with. I need a strong man, so they got me a pirate, you know? So here's the thing. Here's a man's brain. Here's how this is helpful to know for men and women, but here's how our brains typically work. Oh, not like that. They typically work. Some of the women are like, yeah, that's how my husband's brain works. But the thing is, here's how a man's brain works. It usually works, think of it almost like a whole lot of individual boxes, right? There's a box for everything. And only one thing goes in every single box, right? And so for men, we have a box for our house and a box for our job and a box for our money and a box for you and a box for our kids and a box for your mother somewhere in the basement, right? We got boxes for everything, right? I'm kidding. I got a great mother-in-law. But anyway, we got a box for everything. And the rule is, for most guys, is this. When we communicate, the boxes are never to touch each other. They never touch each other, right? So when we're talking about the house, we stay on topic with the house, right? This is how we're just wired. You know, we don't understand. And so here's what happens. Let's say we want to talk about the house. Here's what we do. We take out the house box. We carefully open up the house box, making sure it didn't touch any other box. We open it up. We talk about what's only in the box, nothing else, right? And then after we talked about that one subject, not moving around to anything else, then we carefully shut the box and we put it back. This is how men's brain typically works, right? You know, everything is separated from everything. And it's one of these things where a women's brain, though, is very different. I want you to check this out. Got our sweet princess here, Belle. So women's brain is very different. Let me just, you know. Here's the truth. A woman's brain, for a man, everything is disconnected. For a woman's brain, typically, everything is connected to everything, right? Everything is connected to everything, right? So it's kind of like, you know, the kids are connected to the car, and the car's connected to, you know, your job, and your job's connected to your mother-in-law, all this stuff, right? Everything is connected to everything, and everything is kind of connected on this energy that we call emotion, right? I'm kidding a little bit, but it's one of these things where everything is connected to everything, and this is how oftentimes women think, and so. For instance, it's one of the reasons why women tend to remember everything. They remember everything. My wife remembers everything. Now, men have this capability, but frankly, we just don't care to remember everything. So, it doesn't work like that all the time. So, a little bit different. Not connected to anything, connected to everything, right? Here's the other thing. A man's brain, there's a box that is there's nothing in the box. And we like to call this the nothing box, right? It's the nothing box. And in the nothing box, it really, like, if you were to open it up, it just sounds like this, you know, white noise. There's nothing in the box. And this baffles women, right? It's like this is, but out of all the boxes that a man has, this is his favorite box. Like, this is the go-to, you know? Like, I've been thinking about job and kids and all these things, taking all my boxes out. I'm done taking out boxes, and so we take out the nothing box. And this is why men can go fishing and do this something mindless, seemingly, for hours upon hours upon hours, or drive, and you're talking to them, and it's like, are you paying attention? They're in the nothing box. So, guys, we got to work harder to get out of the nothing box sometime and to focus our attention on our spouse. But the thing about the nothing box is it's one of the things where your wife will oftentimes say, honey, what are you thinking? And you'll say, nothing. And they're like, how can you not be thinking anything? You know, in fact, there was a school, I forget which university, Pennsylvania or something like that, that did a study that basically said that men have the ability to essentially be in this nothing box, think about absolutely nothing and still breathe, right? So interesting. But the thing is, women will say, what are you thinking? And the man will say, nothing. And the woman will oftentimes say, well, something must be wrong. What are you not telling me, right? And we struggle to communicate. And so women, I hear from my wife, she's like, we can't do that. We don't have a nothing box, you know? She tells me that. We don't have a nothing box because everything's connected to everything, and there's always this energy going on. And so she tells me sometimes when she's trying to go to sleep, she's like, you just go to sleep. And here I am. I'm thinking about this connected to this and this connected to this, and how do we solve this? And she said, I can't let my mind rest like that. Now, guys, this is a helpful thing. If you ever say to your wife, what are you thinking or what's wrong? And she says, nothing, right? That doesn't mean nothing because there's not a nothing box, right? That means there is something and you need to spend time talking about it, right? So this is just men and women communicate differently, right? But men and women also express love very differently as well. Hope that was fun for you. Here's the thing. The Apostle Paul in Colossians chapter 3, he's looking at how men and women are wired differently. When he gives these instructions for a married life, and I want you to check out what he says in Colossians chapter 3, verse 18 and 19. He says this, wives, submit yourselves to your husbands as is fitting in the Lord. This is like the proverbial, everybody groans, the women groan, wives submit. Here's what it says, husbands, love your wives, and do not be harsh with them. And so the question is, why is Paul saying two different things? Is this a double standard? What's going on? The truth is, each person is supposed to mutually submit yourself to one another. But Paul uses different language because I think he understands how men and women are wired. They're different. And so here's why I think the Apostle Paul says this. He says, husbands, love your wives. Now that should be real basic, right? But it's basically because men, I think, are not usually great at showing or verbally communicating love. Like, we're just not usually as verbal, and we're not usually as good with feelings and emotions. That's a broad brush, but just this is kind of the typical thing. In fact, in the book Captivating, John and Stacy Eldridge, they write this book, and Stacy is talking about the number one thing that women tend to struggle with. She says the number one thing that women tend to struggle with is with insecurity or fear. And it's this interesting thing because, guys, have you ever noticed that your wife or your girlfriend, oftentimes, she may say, look in the mirror and say, well, how do I look right now? You're like, she looks amazing. She looks gorgeous. You look the same every single day, whether you have makeup on or whether you're in this or that. You look amazing. Why are you asking me that again, right? You wonder kind of what's up with that. It's because your wife needs to know with certainty that you adore her. She needs to have the security that she has your love, that you adore her. And so men, one of the things we can do better is to love our wives. One of the things we can do better is to not keeping our love a mystery. This is what my wife, I was telling her about this message, and she said amen to that one. You know, don't keep your love a mystery, right? Don't communicate it just in here in the nothing brain or somewhere else, right? So take opportunities to tell her how much you cherish her. Take opportunities to show her by the way you act and by the way you sacrifice for her, because she needs to be reminded of it and really be assured that she's precious to you. Men and women communicate and need to experience love differently. Now here's the other thing. Paul, going to the other way, wives. Paul says, wives, submit to your husbands. Now, this has been one of the most abused scripture almost in the entire Bible. One of the most misinterpreted scriptures in all the Bible. Because marriage is a mutual submission between husband and wife, right? The moment that the husband says, you submit to me and I'm not doing that to you, it's no longer the marriage the way God intended. Each person is supposed to submit to one another as you're both submitting yourselves to Christ. And so here's the thing. It says, wives, submit. Why? I think it's because women, usually it's more natural for women to show love, typically. It's usually more natural. So it's like, Paul didn't want to say, hey, wives, love your husbands. It's like, yeah, of course, you do that, right? But the thing is, what he's trying to say is, what I've learned is that the thing that your husband wants, the thing that men need the most, felt need, is to be respected, to feel respect. And so the thing is, men typically they gravitate to places where they're going to feel respected. Where they're gonna feel the most respected. And a lot of times you get respect in your job or at the ballpark or hopefully in your family, but it might as well happen in your marriage. And the opposite thing is true for guys. Men oftentimes avoid places and situations where they're gonna feel disrespected or where they're gonna feel like they're a failure. Like that's the worst thing for a guy. You don't wanna feel like you're failing your spouse and your family or your job, right? And so the thing is, it basically means that, wives, if you want to support your husband, you support your husband by becoming his greatest cheerleader, by having your heart, having a heart full of love for, when you do that, he will have a heart full of love for you. Be his biggest cheerleader. But look for opportunities to show that you're proud of him. Because when men feel like you're proud of him at home, they can't wait to get home to be with you. Now, for both men or women, here's the kind of the final point that I want you to remember, and it's this idea. It's number three. It's share with your spouse how thankful you are for them. Share with your spouse how thankful you are for them. Proverbs 16 says, gracious words are like a honeycomb, sweet to the soul and healing to the bones. Basically, look for ways to praise your spouse, to appreciate your spouse, and make it genuine, right? Don't, like, make it up. But look for ways, like catch them doing something well and compliment them. It means like share something that you love about them. I love the way you do this. Or here's what I love about you. It means maybe you can leave a thank you note behind for them or something like that, telling them how special they are. But keep finding ways to communicate your love. Because when you do, when you use words that build up instead of tear down, when you strive to praise your spouse for what they've done or for what they're doing, man, it propels your relationship to new heights. And so as we think about that, as we think about communication, let me pray over us as we close this time. God, we're so grateful for the way you love us, for the way that you have communicated your great love to us in this, that while we were yet sinners, Christ, you came and you died for us. And God, as we look at that model in all of our relationships, as we've been doing that throughout this series, I pray, God, that you would help us even in the way that we communicate to one another. Help us today. Help us this week. Help us this month and this year and to the rest of our lives. Help us to walk in the way of love. Help us to lead with love in the way we communicate with our spouses and everybody around us. But God, help us also to understand how that we can love and cherish each other by the way we use our words, by the way we communicate. God, we know that every relationship takes work, but it's worth it. It's worth it. But God, we invite you into the process. We invite you to change us and to mold us. And God, we thank you for your grace, even when we mess up. But God, in this season, I pray that you would help us to become even greater communicators, to walk in the way of love, and to communicate that to one another. And we ask this in your name. Amen.